Today is November 19th, season 2, episode 41. Decky, don't stop. How are we doing today?
Good. Andy, anytime, dude. We are crushing it. It's the 41st week. We got Keith Daniels, an entrepreneur, a lawyer, that we met at LinkedIn Local. What a time that was. Just a bunch of right angles. Andrew and I perusing the area, trying to find some cool people to talk to, and Keith comes out of nowhere, dude. It's the coolest guy, coolest conversation talking about cybersecurity. Something that, a conversation that is not too often had, but we took a step forward and had the conversation. It was awesome.
It was awesome. Stick around for the back end when we hit home in average quality. Oh, what did you learn in a feel-good story? Be a back end member. Be a tier above the rest. Enjoy the ride. Intro music, it's your time to shine. I'm just an ordinary average guy. My friends all are boring, and so am I. We're just ordinary average guys. Let's get this bread. We're doing it live. Keith, how are we doing today? Welcome to the Back Pocket Podcast.
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me here.
Absolutely. So, man, last time we saw you was sometime in September.
A little warmer then, I think.
A little warmer and at the LinkedIn Local event.
That's correct.
And what a time that was. Just what are your like thoughts on that, by the way? Just like what are your intentions going into that? Because we obviously had some stuff thinking about going into it.
Well, anytime you go into an event like that, I think it's important to try and make some human contact with some people. It's not an opportunity and to just go out and pass out business cards. I think you really need to go up and start a conversation with somebody. And when I go into an event like that, I'm just looking to meet two or three people I might want to have a further conversation with later. So the biggest suggestion I ever have to anybody who's interested or curious or is freaked out about going into a networking event like that is realize everyone else is scared too. Don't go to the person who's standing all alone because you'll never get away from them. Find two or three people, and it's great if in that two or three people there's a woman there, because the female will always make you welcome.
Yes, that's a great point. And it was definitely dangerous on our end for the sense of like what we were talking about wasn't necessarily, like you kind of said, was in not a business card sense. It was very conversational. That's what we are. We're a podcast. So in that sense, it was very easy. But the other sense was like, when someone's talking to us, they could just feel like, why are we talking to these guys again? But we caught up with you mm-hmm. towards the end. And I think the last 45 minutes, you, us three, and a few other people in the LinkedIn Local were just having the best conversation. We're like, all right, Keith, we got to schedule a time. 2 months later, we have you on the podcast. So to give our marketing interns a little background about yourself, because mm-hmm. They don't know you. We do, but they don't. So could you briefly describe kind of what you're doing right now and how you got into that?
All right. Well, currently right now, I've got a couple ventures going, which draw upon some of my past and some of my hopefully future. One of them is what I call Cyber Council, and it's a consulting organization, which will hopefully morph into a legal consulting organization. I'm taking the Minnesota Bar in February. And using that to help small and medium-sized enterprises deal with the ever-changing world of cybersecurity and data privacy. There's a lot of new laws and regulations coming out, more being considered, and we're going to be seeing a lot of changes in the privacy security world. The other thing I've got going is called KBD Insurance Solutions. I've got a long time history working for insurance carriers, and previously when I was practicing law in Chicago, for a long time I did insurance coverage work for Lloyd's of London and several insurance carriers. So what I'm working there is to help people understand what their risks are, how they can handle them through insurance, and understand those policies better. What I found in sort of melding of the two is that a lot of enterprises and non-for-profit organizations, for-profit organizations, they've been told they need to buy what's known as a cyber liability insurance policy. It's supposed to protect them in case there's some ne'er-do-well breaks into their system and takes customer data, shuts them down, does anything wrong in their system. they don't understand the ins and outs of those policies. Their insurance agent doesn't know the ins and outs of those policies. And that's an issue that I think a lot of people need help with, and that's what I'm trying to build a business on.
Cybersecurity, man. It's a dangerous topic, and that's what we're going to be diving into for the next probably 30, 40 minutes. I'm excited.
Yeah, and I think what we that's kind of really need where we need to start. I mean, just in the basis of cybersecurity, what is like the current issue that you're building these businesses on, and what is the kind of your solution for it? I think that was something.
As we all check our phones.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the first thing. I think the core thing is getting the attention of businesses. The large companies, the 3Ms, the Medtronics, et cetera, the big companies, they know their exposures. They've seen Target and know the risk there. That's a well-known breach. They know well what's going on in Europe and elsewhere in the world with new laws and regulations because they're worldwide organizations. And they're very complex organizations and they're very robust organizations. And they have a lot of talent in-house and they can afford to pay for a lot of big talent outside coming in. But it's the small and medium enterprise, the company that's maybe has 50 to 100 employees or less. And their IT person is the kid who can then figure out how to put the computers together and tie them together from high school. Not a security person. And they may have a consultant on retainer, so to speak, but that person may only know how to install certain programs and not really know the overall climate of what's going on in the world. And a lot of these companies, whether they know it or not, are exposed because of the data they have to laws that they don't even think they're subject to. There are plenty of small and medium businesses who are subcontractors, vendors, etc., of large organizations. They're dealing with data from those organizations, and they may have protected personal information coming from the larger organization. Well, they're not immune from the laws that apply to those larger organizations in many cases. And when someone is trying to break into those large organizations, they don't normally start at 3M or Target. They start at the small vendor, the small business, and work their way up because they know that's the low-hanging fruit. It's easier to get in, and then they can work their way through the systems to get up to the larger place where they feel the money is.
Okay. Now, just understanding kind of, so you were a lawyer in mm-hmm. Chicago. Is that correct?
Correct.
How did you get into that, man? Like, that's not an easy profession. We have a friend who's going through law school right now, and the last time we heard of him was when he graduated.
God bless him.
Yeah. So what's that all about, man? How did you get into that?
It's the funniest thing that growing up, my best friend, Jeff Hallowen, and I, both about fifth or sixth grade, decided we were going to become lawyers. And neither of us had lawyers in the family. And it just sort of happened. I was a political science major and at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, and got involved in a lot of the politics there. And it was just a normal thing. I was thinking I was going to go to law school. I applied to 3 or 4 law schools. I didn't apply to 10 or 15 like a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
I was all set and was about to go to Washington University in St. Louis. I was on the waiting list at Madison. And day before I was going to load up the car and move to Beverly, so to speak, got a call and said, do you want to go to Madison? We've got a place for you.
That's awesome.
So I went to the University of Wisconsin Law School. Madison was a magical place to be back when I was there.
Right. Still, yeah. Still is.
Still has its
When was that?
Yeah.
Not to date you at all.
Yeah, not to date me. It was in Murray. 1980, I started in 1985, graduated in 88.
Okay.
Right. Well before you guys were even a glimmer in anyone's eye, I'm guessing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it was interesting. I remember in law school thinking I'm never going to do anything in insurance, so I'm not going to take the insurance course.
All right.
Lo and behold, everything in the world relates to insurance, I've discovered in life. Every business decision has some kind of risk to it, and every decision that nonprofits make have. And a lot of the things we do is because insurance companies have told us we have to do them.
Right.
I mean, you've got sprinklers in buildings because insurance companies say that's a great thing to do to keep down the fire risk.
Right.
You've got seat belts in cars because, you know, they don't want people getting killed as often in cars. And so on and so forth. There's a lot of just things we take for granted, which really are driven by the insurance world.
And just kind of pivot real quick, did your buddy make it through law school as well?
My buddy made it through law school.
Okay. So you both made it fifth grade, the pact, and it lived to its fullest.
It did. He actually went to Northwestern.
Okay.
Wow.
And he went to work for a big law firm in Chicago. I went to work for the U.S. Army and
really?
Spent... almost 4.5 years on active duty with the Army and the Army JAG Corps.
Well, thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd let me, I'd do it all over again. It was fun.
Awesome. What was that? Because you were in Madison, and then was that the next step right after that, or was there something in between?
Well, I had an interesting situation. In law school, a lot of the jobs come out of really interviews your second year of law school. And then you clerk between your second and third year at a law firm. And typically, you if you do a reasonable job there, and I think the biggest thing is, can you hold your alcohol back then? They'll invite you back, and you become an associate when you graduate. I was working for a nice little litigation firm in Madison. They gave me an offer, so I didn't even bother interviewing. I thought, I'll stay in Madison. It's a great town.
Mm-hmm.
Nice little firm. I enjoy the people. And worked there for the summer between my second and third year. And suddenly the law firm blew up, which can happen. You just don't know. And suddenly I didn't have a job offer anymore. So I was scrambling for a job. Most of the big firms had already hired people. And I ended up with a small firm in Beloit, Wisconsin. I landed in Beloit and within about 5 minutes realized that's not where I want to be for the next 10 minutes.
I drive past Beloit every day because I'm from Chicago. So coming up here, you pass Beloit and it's just like...
You drive by the good part of Beloit when you're on the interstate.
Okay.
Go a few more miles in and you'll see what you don't want to see. And stayed there for... I was there for about 6 months and decided I got to get out of here and ended up looking at my options and figured out the Army was a good one. And
really?
Went into the Army in December 31, 1989, or 88 actually is my entry date. And went to the basic course at Fort Lee, Virginia. And then went to officer basic course, which is at the University of Virginia campus. And then to the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And was with the 101st when they did the Panama invasion. And I was there during the first Persian Gulf War. I didn't deploy with them. I was told I was the next guy to go, and we never got to the next guy.
Wow.
Did
you want to go?
I was getting a lot of experience that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise right. if I'd gone. But when I saw the videotapes come back of my friends over there, I was kind of jealous of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dang. Although it was damn hot and a lot of sand over there, that's for sure.
No kidding. That's crazy.
And then I went from there to the 101st, and I prosecuted. I did legal assistance work. I did some environmental work. And went to Utah to a place called Dugway Proving Ground. And there were two attorneys. And I was the only attorney there for a good part of the time. And did a lot of environmental and administrative work out there. There was a test facility where they did a lot of biological work with chemicals historically. Most of that was done in the 50s and early 60s, not so much now. But that meant that the U.S. Army had a lot of cleanup to do. And it was a good, interesting place, and Utah's a beautiful place to be, so I didn't mind that at all. And then I was, you know, looking at what I was going to do next, stay in the Army or get out. And this was a time period in the Clinton administration when they decided that we were not going to fight any more wars and we wouldn't need a military anymore. So there was a real drawdown. I got out, ended up moving to Chicago because my wife at the time had family there. Joined a law firm, walked in thinking I was going to do litigation work, and found out I was doing insurance coverage work.
Mm-hmm. It's like back to that insurance, man.
Yeah, back to that insurance. And spent most of the next 10 years practicing with them, a couple different names of the law firms, and then with a couple different law firms, representing some American insurance carriers and some Lloyd's of London syndicates. And I spent a lot of time going back and forth between Chicago and London and handling cases all around the country. And it was there that I sort of got the cyber bug. They were asking us to advise them on whether the world was going to shut down on January 1st, 2000.
The Y2K.
The Y2K.
Of course. We were only, what, 4 years old at that time?
2000.
Yeah, I really wanted to know about what happened. What was Y2K all about, man?
Well,
didn't have computer, something to do with, like, the code.
Yeah, computer code, for those people who are into computer coding, no, it's all zeros and ones.
Yeah, binary.
And the concern was on January 1, 2000, it would suddenly be 010000, and they didn't think the systems could handle that, that they wouldn't understand what 00 meant, that it would reset to 1800 or 1900. And suddenly they thought mortgages would suddenly be reset and break payment terms, contracts would reset, gasoline station pumps would shut down, things of that nature. It was a concern that utilities would shut down because they thought the system might not understand what the code meant.
Right.
My opinion at the time was that you guys in business are spending billions of dollars fixing this problem. I'm pretty sure they're going to do it. And lo and behold, I was right. But out of that, started looking at, okay, we see that, and believe me, by 2000, we're a long way in history beyond where we are now. I mean, we didn't have smartphones. We didn't have much in the way of, we didn't have laptops yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we did see that computers were becoming a bigger and bigger item in our world. And they would probably get faster and faster developing into our world as time went on. I don't think anyone could pretend we'd be where we are now. But started thinking out, okay, how if computers and business start using more of this stuff and things go wrong, what kind of things could go wrong? And how would that affect different types of coverage and insurance policies? And out of that, figured that there's no policy that covers the issue of when you are alleged to have been negligent in harming another person with transmitting viruses or worms or things of that nature. And actually, worms was a term that they thought was going to use, and it rarely has ever happened. But and we threw in a little coverage for what we call business interruption. When your business gets shut down because you've received something and it helps pay the cost of your business shutdown, your loss of income.
Right.
Well, over the years, it's turned out that the exposure to all the data breaches that have happened, and they're in the news every day, isn't so much that third party, what we call third party, where I'm getting sued by another company for saying I harmed their system by sending them something which had a problem in it. The biggest loss the companies are facing is that business interruption, and they're shutting down while they're trying to fix their system and clean up their system.
Right. They lose all that money.
They lose all that money. Right. And then the third thing, which for the larger companies and some companies, depending on what goes on, is the notification costs, if they have to notify people that their records have been breached.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of the unquantifiable is their reputation damage.
All right. So what's going on with kind of where cybersecurity is at now. So you got four guys in a room right now who use social media like it's their life.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically giving data and information to the Facebooks of the world, the Instagrams of the world.
Every app on your phone
mm-hmm. Is connected to the internet and providing these companies with all your data. How is that data being protected, if it is at all, and how is it being utilized and sold and manipulated and so on and so forth?
Well, you are far ahead of most people just in that assessment that you gave right there. So congratulations.
Thanks.
Pat yourself on the back. Yeah.
Sweet brag.
The issue of our privacy is one that I think it was Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote in a decision that he defined privacy as the right to be left alone. Mm-hmm. Well, we've given up huge amounts of that privacy to the government, to Google, to Facebook, to Yahoo, to umpteen others, predominantly just because it's convenient. We are used to giving up privacy and our data so we can get something for free. And as a result, these companies, how are they making money? They're not making money by providing you with free service. That's a money loser.
Right.
They make money by selling that data to other companies. Mm. And there is a huge business. I mean, it wasn't like when General Motors came out with OnStar in their vehicles, it wasn't long before OnStar, that General Motors was a technology company. It wasn't a car company anymore. They were making money on their technology, not on the vehicles they were making.
Really?
And that's what's kept General Motors in business.
Wow.
You know, it knows where all the vehicles are. It can track that information. It can sell that information.
So are you saying by from going to the extent of like the sedans were traveling in this fashion, they can track it?
Pretty much.
Okay, with OnStar, they were able to see the paths every car was taking.
They could see where it stopped.
Sure.
Other things, mm-hmm. and so they've got a traffic pattern that they can set.
What cars were going on long trips.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, there's...
And then from that, they were able to like design around the tendencies that these cars were moving, traveling.
Well, you know, they could sell... Saying, look, we know that the people who buy this type of car tend to travel to certain parts of the country or certain places.
Oh, yeah.
And they could say, you know, then sell that information to people and who can make use of that.
Right.
And now many of us we're using either Google Maps or Waze or something on our phone to let us know how to get from point A to point B. I know I did today getting here. And all that information is being fed in, and it's tracking where I've been and speed I was traveling and how many times I stopped. All of that information is going somewhere, and someone can make use of that.
So like when you go and look at shoes on the internet, and then you get an ad on Facebook for those same exact shoes.
Oh, you'll get it for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's all harnessed kind of in the Facebook pixel. We use that all the time. Is that like a good example of you're basically giving your data to the shoe or apparel company, and then it's just feeding it back through Facebook, or is Facebook kind of in control of that data? I'm confused on the process.
When you have the Facebook app on your phone, mm-hmm. it essentially is tracking everything you do. All the searches you do on your phone, everything. It's basically tracking it.
Listening to you as well, I assume.
That's sort of a thing that it's listening to you, but it, not so much, although it could.
Yeah.
There's nothing that says it couldn't,
mm-hmm.
but they claim they're not. Google with with its systems and others that have, you know, hey Siri, hey Alexa, whatever,
yeah.
claim they're not actively listening to you, but they could be.
They very well could be. That would make sense if they were. I mean, they have the full capability to.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're talking to that, and they're tracking your voice to gather what you're asking.
Correct.
So they easily could be listening to things when you're not talking directly at Alexa, directly at Siri.
It could well happen. Could well happen. Oof. There have been some interesting, you know, different people have different ideas of how private they want to be.
Yeah.
And how much they want to control it. And it's virtually impossible to be totally private anymore. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of effort and significant funds. I was reading an article that this guy cost, but he said it took him about $50,000 worth of money to pay for to try and get himself as close to anonymous to everybody in the world as he could. You got to do things like take Facebook and take all those apps off your cell phone. Mm-hmm. If you're not using an app on a cell phone every month, take it off.
Right.
You know, do a regular hygiene. If you do have apps, don't sign in through it through Facebook.
Which is all. And I do it every time.
You know, it's easy.
Yeah.
And that's why people do it.
It's convenient.
I have a ton of questions off this, but the main one is, do you think the control lies in the user, or do you think the control should be in laws? Like Facebook should not be allowed to take this data without your permission, instead of just saying, I acknowledge this by hitting that little check mark. There should be another step, or is it more in my shoes of like, if you don't want your data being used, don't use Facebook?
Your first part of your question is more of the European model. That's how Europeans view privacy as opposed to Americans. Europeans view privacy as very personal. They own it, and only they can give it away if they intentionally give it away. We sort of look at it as the opposite. We give it away, and sometimes we might want to grab it back. We look at things like Facebook. We look at things like Google and Yahoo and other things we might go on to. And, okay, we could have laws that go into effect much like the European version, where we have to affirmatively consent to them getting our data, and we have the ability to affirmatively pull it back. There's some discussion in Washington of that. California's passed a law recently, which is going to go into effect in a few years, that goes down that road.
What is that law specifically? I saw that the other day.
It's California's law is going into effect in 2020. I can't remember the acronym. It's like CCAP, CCAP. And right now it's going through a lot of back and forth still with the legislature and the attorney general and so forth in California, because the attorney general says, I don't have the assets in my budget to do anything with this law.
Well, and does the attorney general even know what he's like disputing or passing a law for? Just asking.
And this is the attorney general of California.
Yeah.
I think understands generally, but I think, you know, legislatures tend to try and solve whatever the latest crisis is as soon as possible.
Right.
And they often don't think about the next step.
Mm-hmm. The overall long-term impact.
Well, the overall long-term impact or even the short-term, how would we put it into effect?
Right.
The Europeans, when they put their general data privacy regulation, the GDPR, into effect, that went into effect this past May, that had been discussed and proposed over a 3 to 4 year period. So there's a lot of lead in before it went into effect that people could start to understand where it was going, but it was still evolving over that time. California rushed a law into place and didn't have a lot of feedback into that putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're now looking at it a little bit and trying to figure it out, but at the same time, with what happened with the Cambridge Analytica problem with Facebook, that people got upset with it in the last election.
Which was just they had...
What they had done is that a year or two prior to the election, they sold data on certain users to this Cambridge Analytica over in the UK.
Okay.
That organization used that data to develop a quiz. And there were a lot of quizzes going on, like, you know, which member of the Friends would you be? Or if you were what tree would you be, or something like that.
Which Harry Potter
character would you be? You know,
what's the Hufflepuff, Gryffindor,
Ravenclaw?
Yeah, Ravenclaw. Yeah. I was a Ravenclaw, by the way.
Okay, Ravenclaw. Yeah, which school would you have gone to? Yeah. Harry Potter. Yeah. You know.
I think that's the biggest one in the UK, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you answer those questions. And what happened was people were answering these questions, and then they were forwarding them to their friends. And suddenly Cambridge Analytica not only could see the data on the people filling out the original thing, but they could see the data from their friends.
Yeah.
Which theoretically was outside of what Facebook data had given them. And that was what some people got upset about.
Just because it was like a second party source, essentially. But
that people who had not been part of the actual quiz, suddenly their friends got sucked into this.
Right. Okay.
And so that Cambridge Analytica got a larger group of people and then theoretically could use that data simply in a marketing fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And they could develop messages to go out that they thought would help particular candidates, same way they thought they could persuade people to buy certain shoes or certain coats or certain perfumes, whatever. It was the same kind of process.
Okay, and so that's a good kind of a segue. So like this past election, not really to touch on the election itself, but kind of the style of the marketing tactics behind it, where you, like how the algorithms are set up now, as far as I understand, is if you really like and engage with one party or the other, then that's what you're going to consistently get more of. And that's kind of how the algorithm is built to basically fit what you like. They're not going to just show you everything. They're going to show you only what you like. Is that going to be like as election season just passed now, but just for future elections, are we going to be seeing that similar model, or is it kind of like they learned something from the 2016 election that needs to be improved on or something like that?
Facebook and Google, etc., are private companies and determine their own it.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
Their own programs and their own this and that, and government cannot make a determination one way or another. After the election, Mark Zuckerberg and his people at Facebook decided they would change the programming behind Facebook to do what you just said.
Yeah.
That they thought that people were getting ambushed or misled by all this stuff, and so let's just make it so people could talk to their friends who agree with them. Maybe that will cause people to agree with each other more. Well, that's only put people in the echo chambers.
Right.
Suddenly you're only talking to people who agree with you, and you're not hearing any other viewpoint, any other side to an argument. And I think that is not helpful, but that's where we are. And you have to know a little trick to break the algorithm.
Right. And is it kind of weird that all these, they're private companies, so it's totally legal, I think. But Andrew and I were talking about this the other day, how like Instagram and Facebook and all the stuff that we use so heavily to promote our podcast and this podcast and everything, like they don't even give us the algorithm on how to be the best at it. Or you really just have to, it's a trial by fire type thing, and they could change it tomorrow.
Yeah, right when you think you figured it out, they'll change it on you, and then you're in the wrong.
There are people who make a decent living supposedly on search engine optimization, you know, for Google and Facebook, et cetera. And they may know it right now, but it can change in a heartbeat, and suddenly all their knowledge goes out the window.
And do you think that should be common knowledge? Like their algorithm should not be hidden from the public? Or where do you stand on that?
I think it's proprietary data, what goes behind it, you know, the secret sauce. But, you know, their businesses, they're trying to make money. They are now the most powerful companies in the world. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
And I do think it would behoove them to act differently. But I don't think government can really tell them to act much differently. Unless they fall afoul of antitrust or something like that, and if someone wants to be brave enough to fight that fight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they broke up Ma Bell, so maybe they could.
Fair enough.
You know, the algorithms change. I know Facebook used to be a great place to market your business. People would run ads on it all the time. It wasn't that expensive. You could reach all sorts of people. It's for the small business, it's now almost unusable. But, you know, so you're seeing these large buys from larger players, and those ads are filling you up.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing, like, the local insurance agent anymore, or, you know, the sandwich shop on the corner putting a little coupon out anymore, because they can't buy them enough. They mm-hmm. just can't get in there. So, you know, I think that from what I've heard from people, the key thing on, you know, you can use Facebook, you can use Instagram, whatever, you have a website. Make sure you've got the words that you want in there and the information there you want people to search for, and if it does, you'll pick it up. And then you've got to keep working on it and keep it going, because you just don't know where things are going to change. And one of the biggest things, and you're the social media guys, is if you have a web page or something, is put as much video as you can on it.
Yeah, so we do memes as well. I don't know if you're familiar. We've seen them explode.
Those memes.
Memes, maybe.
Meme. Yeah.
There you go. Go ahead, dude. So the, I mean, you're so heavily involved in cybersecurity. What's your biggest concern going forward, let's say, in the next 5 years?
Well, I think my biggest concern is that there's a couple concerns. First of all, people have to understand that the cyber criminals and the bad people look at this as their job. This is their 9-to-5 job. They have quotas to make. They have numbers they have to hit. Those are the professionals, and they're working on it. And this is what they're doing every day. Drop the kids off at school. Go
and hack Target.
And try and break into a Target. And doing it in Russia. They're doing it in Eastern Europe. They're doing it in China. And that's the professionals who are trying to get in there. You have a few, you know, the stereotypical kid in the basement who are more curious. They want to know how it works. And they may not have any nefarious thoughts behind it. They just want to know how the system works, and oftentimes if they break in, they will let the company know that they broke in. A lot of people refer to people in this area as hackers. A lot of professionals hate that term, because a hacker is simply someone who's curious about a system and wants to know how it works. Doesn't mean they mean any harm.
Right.
So they have sort of broken up. You have what they're called white hat hackers, who are those people who are either hired by a company to break in, and companies pay people to do what's called penetration testing. And they try and figure out if there's holes in their system by hiring people to hack into them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the black hat hackers, who are the people trying to make money off of this. And then you got in the middle the gray hats, who sometimes do the good things and sometimes try and make money.
Mercenaries.
Pretty much. The long term, the biggest issue is the industry is saying there are close to 1 million cybersecurity jobs that need to be filled right now that aren't filled in the United.
1 million?
1 million.
Holy cow.
And they expect.
So what you're saying is drop what I'm doing and get into cybersecurity.
It would be a good career path. Okay. You could still do this on the side.
Yes.
It is a lot of, I mean, look at what business is. Business is all data now. Everything we do involves all that laptop and transferring this and that online and so on. People need to be there to protect it, and people need to figure out what the attacks are and where they're coming from. And if they hit, how do we remedy them and how do we mitigate it so it's not shutting us down forever? Right. I mean, not everyone is the Nigerian prince who's promised us $15 billion in gold if we just give him $50,000 so we can get out of the country.
Right.
There's plenty of people, well, the people behind the SAMSAM virus, for example, that is a thing that just nested into people's computers and basically shut down the city of Atlanta for several months and the Colorado Department of Transportation for several months.
When was this?
That was approximately a year ago now.
Wow, never heard of that. That's wild. The SAMSAM virus?
It was the SAMSAM virus.
Just got into someone's computer and just hung out?
Basically gets in there and then suddenly, boom, they switch it on and it eats up all sorts of data and basically shut down the courts in Atlanta, shut down the Atlanta airport, shut down most of the departments in the city of Atlanta.
Holy cow.
I think it cost them about, last I heard, about $2 million trying to clean their system up. And it also hit the Department of Transportation for Colorado twice. And then there's others out there that are happening. We talk about it's a version of ransomware, although SAMSAM gets in there and they don't really know who to pay is the problem.
Right. So how does it work then? I mean, you mentioned 1 million jobs in the realm of cybersecurity. So is that kind of shedding light on the fact that there are a lot of people out there, a lot of companies maybe, that are just vulnerable to being attacked and it's only a matter of time? Or, I mean, how does it really break down?
Well, I think it was Bob Mueller, when he was the FBI director, who famously has been quoted in every speech since then on cybersecurity, that there are two types of companies. There are those companies that have been breached and those companies that have been breached but don't know it yet. Because virtually everyone has been breached. There's a survey by the Ponemon Institute. I may be pronouncing that wrong. Maybe Ponemon. I don't know how it's pronounced. And they do a survey of every year. And the average time from when an intruder breaks into a system to the time it's discovered is close to 6 months. On average.
It's a long time.
Yeah. So someone can get in, do a lot of poking around and looking around and extracting things before it's ever discovered, especially in the larger organizations. And the smaller ones don't even have the systems in place to know what's going on.
And that's kind of who you're working with right now, is the smaller organizations, trying to get them up to snuff and seeing how you can help, pretty much? Or?
That's where who I think needs the most help, where I can be of most value.
So like knucklehead podcasters like us who started a company and don't know what we're doing?
Well, you're learning as you go. That's how we all do it.
Right. Absolutely. But it's only a matter of time until Backpocket gets hacked, right?
Yeah, it's a matter of time. I mean, through this whole evolution of cybersecurity and you breaking down the fundamentals of what cybersecurity is and what today looks like in all the different realms of social media, the internet, what is in your back pocket as this independent consultant working with a few other people? What is in your company's back pocket and yours as well to help these middlemen companies make sure that they are doing their job on their end?
Well, I think the key thing is I understand as a layman how to talk with them and to talk to the technical people. I can be the person in between. A lot of times you bring the technical people in and it's talking to a different planet. And the average business owner doesn't have that kind of, unless they're a technology business, doesn't have that background. A lot of businesses, particularly regulated businesses, healthcare, financial advice, banking, so forth, they know that the regulations are on them to keep this data private. So they're a little bit more receptive to it and they need it. But I think that they need advice and they don't need to spend $500 an hour for it. I'll take a little bit less. From the big law firms in town. And they need advice as to, okay, how do they prepare? How do they have a plan in place? Who are they going to call if something happens? Just do what is known as a tabletop test, run some different scenarios for them. You know, business owner is on vacation and incommunicado because he decided he wanted to be in the woods doing some camping and there's no cell service. What happens if the system gets breached and you can't reach the business owner? who's going to be the person making the phone calls?
Our boy Keith.
Yeah, who's on your team to bring in? Do you need to have forensic analysis done? Do you need to have legal? Do you need to have public relations? Do you need to have a cybersecurity person come in and lock your system down? All sorts of things that you have to figure out need to go into your plan. Not to mention, just with the new rules and regulations, if you're doing any business with anybody in Europe, really at this point, you're going to have to update your privacy policies that are on your website. You're going to have avenues to, as you say, have people opt in to officially give them permission to take their data. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have a system, whether you create a separate system or you merge systems, where if someone comes in and wants their data changed, they want to know where their data is, or they want it deleted, that you have the ability to do that. California is requiring that as well in their new law.
Okay.
It's very similar. That's why I call it GDPR Lite. It's similar to the European model.
Okay.
Now, at the same time, where all this is happening, there has been discussions in Washington, and this would be a change, because up to now, we've had a hodgepodge of laws among all the 50 states in the District of Columbia. They're all different. They all set their own law. California is important because, well, what California does impacts a lot of people because they've got 40, 50 million people there. Yeah. And
they're like their own economy.
It's like their own economy. We haven't had a federal law. We've had the Federal Trade Commission sort of be the lead federal agency, but they can only go in certain circumstances when there's misrepresentations and undue things of that nature. But they're not getting involved with the standard breach. The Securities and Exchange Commission gets involved if they believe, and this is something that's actually rather new, if a publicly traded company has a breach and hasn't done basic things for security, and therefore the stock value has gotten harmed, that they're going after some directors and officers now, which is something new and something I thought was going to happen 20 years ago, but finally happening.
Oh.
But again, they're only getting involved after the fact. So there's no federal law that says you have to do this or that, unless you're in healthcare with HIPAA and what's known as high tech, or you're dealing with kids. There's a law that pertains to what they can do with the apps and the games and so forth for kids signing in.
Right.
They're supposed to have certain protections for that. But we don't have any overarching privacy and data breach law. Well, Congress, in the Senate at least, has been talking about that, and the administration was going to propose something. I don't know if they actually ever did propose it before this last election, but I know there has been some recent discussion, both on the Republican side of the Senate and the Democratic side, to put some new law together and see if they can get it through the system. It doesn't sound like the administration is against that. So, yeah, I think it's quite likely we could have a national privacy law in the next year or two.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. It seems like our country's evolving.
Yeah.
And kind of to pivot off a core question off that with the back pocket is how you've been evolving maybe personally. So this is a core question with your average quality. What would be your average quality? And we frame it in a way if you do this sometimes well at times and other times not so well. And at the end of the day, this is your wildly average attribute, habit, emotion, etc.
Boy, like everybody, I think I'm great at everything. and that's actually something that they've done studies that people always overestimate how good they are. We always think we're much better at anything we do than we really are.
Sure.
I'd say I'm always acquiring new information, and I'm always sucking up new information, and I'm trying to distill it and digest it in a way that I can communicate it. And maybe that's my biggest strength, and maybe sometimes that's my biggest weakness. Maybe I think I'm an expert before I'm an expert. And maybe I get out there and try things before I'm quite ready. I started the businesses I've started, on a shoestring, like a lot of people do. I left a job in Chicago with not a lot of money in my pocket, but I'm working on it. And, I'm confident that better days are ahead. So,
awesome.
That's all I can do. And, You know, all I can say as far as life goes is very few of us have life on a straight line. It's pretty much a good zigzag, and we never know when we're going up and when we're going down.
That's true, and you got to really handle it all the same, right?
You've got to adapt and just keep moving forward.
That's right. It was cool. We do our research here at the Back Pocket. We know you work at the WeWork facility in here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. What's it like working, around a bunch of young, savvy entrepreneurs who are trying to, you know, keep moving forward in that same aspect?
I find it really a lot of fun. And it's exciting to see them and talk with them. And they're doing all sorts of different things. A lot of them are technology related. My little space, we call it the cubby, is right next to this company with two or three guys who are doing a lot of technology, but to test athletes so they can try and improve their performance.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a cool concept, the way I see them doing it. We've got people doing all sorts of other things. Bunker Labs has a big place there, and they do a lot of technology work for military veterans coming out. And it's a very vibrant, very energetic, positive place, I'd say.
Competitive. Probably.
I'm sure it's competitive in a way. The one thing is, what anybody's doing is really not a secret to anybody who walks by.
Mm-hmm.
Because the window, the walls and the doors and everything in the building are glass.
Okay.
So everyone's seeing other people active. And you see the boards with them talking about their pipeline and talking about this client and that client and this client. And it's a lot of, you know, synergistic things going on. And then the WeWorks itself, I think, does a good job. Although I wish they would, when they were bringing pizza, I wish they would put meat on it. But anyway, that's their plot. That's their idea. They don't put meat on anything.
Why?
Something about meat uses too much water or something.
That's beyond me.
Yeah. I'm out.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But they do a lot of programs as well that get people to collaborate and talk to each other. They do these sales. Just, I think it was yesterday, they had some people in talking about sales, and a lot of people were walking through and listening, and mm-hmm. some people stayed and watched the whole thing. Other people's moved around.
Mm-hmm.
I know when they did something like the Minnesota Entrepreneurial Week, which was, a couple months ago? They did a lot of those events there.
Okay,
that's and, awesome. A lot of the people who were speaking were actually residents, so to speak, of the WeWorks facility.
There you go.
Awesome. Well, transition to the back end of our show.
Yeah.
We got a game alert.
Game.
All right, so this is a game intended for us to ask you where you believe these companies' cybersecurity is truly. So we're going to rattle off a few companies, and okay. if you could give us your 2 cents. This will be called Keith's 2 cents game.
Okay.
Going off our Gino 2 cents from a few weeks ago.
Yeah, dude, nice game.
Yep. So we'll name a few companies and maybe give a 10 to 30 second spiel on how you think they're doing. First one is a company we are very familiar with is Squarespace. They're the website design. We use them to design our website, building those analytics, and then selling our products on that website. How do you think their cybersecurity is?
Oh boy, somebody in the cybersecurity world is going to get me right now.
That's what this is all about.
I would guess it's pretty good.
Okay.
What, you want me to give you like a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah, scale yeah, 1 yeah. to 10.
Blind Please. Scale.
With only knowing what you just told me, I think I've seen the name of it somewhere. Most companies, particularly in this field, are probably at about a 9.5 to 9.
Oh, wow.
I think most of them are trying to tighten it up and button it up.
Okay.
The problem is that the bad guys are changing the game every day. And you can have the best system in the world. You can have the hugest spend on it. You can be IBM. You can be Yahoo. You can be Google. You can be Facebook. you can be Medtronic, you can be whomever. And something or somehow they might get in.
Okay.
The biggest issue that most companies have, honestly, the cause of most data breaches isn't some outside hacker breaking into a system. It's an employee.
Really? In-house? Just giving away their password and username?
About something like 91 or 92% of data breaches go back to basically a negligent employee.
Oh, no. So like those spam emails when someone like accidentally fills that out, that could be potentially a breach.
That can be a breach.
Didn't think about that.
Somebody has, you know, they take the work computer home. Maybe they're on a trip. Oops, I left it at the airport, or I left it in the cab.
Yeah.
That's considered a breach.
Oh, jeez.
Cell phones have enough data on them now that losing a cell phone can be considered a data breach.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
I mean, there was a, just on the issue of a lost laptop, and there was no information that anything bad had happened. But there was a financial advisor down in Alabama who was fined by the entity that governs financial advisors. It's called the Financial Regulatory Authority, FINRA. It fined this guy several hundred thousand dollars because he lost a laptop where the data wasn't encrypted.
Oh.
Because the firm had a policy that all data should be encrypted.
Yeah, and he broke that.
And he broke the policy. There was no evidence that anyone had ever found it. As far as we know, it could have just fallen off the side of his boat into the lake and no one ever found it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a breach, and he got fined for just violating a policy.
Sure.
All right, so I got another company for you. It's one of my favorite neighborhood restaurants. It's Applebee's. A lot of money getting poured into Applebee's nowadays with their drink specials and half apps after 9. They're just trying to get a lot of us young kids there. Do you think they got pretty good cybersecurity?
Hopefully better than their food.
Yo,
a good point. I mean, well, they use those menus now on the table.
Yeah, like, so swipe them.
Yeah, you swipe them, and you really don't even need your waiter waitress anymore. You can just plug in what you want.
Well, the question I have with that is, like, if you go into any kind of Starbucks or Caribou or any kind of coffee shop, you're going to see people tapping away on their computers, most of them using the open Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much for a cyber criminal to sit there with a little sniffer, we call it, on their computer and suddenly be getting all of the internet information from all of the people in that cafe.
Like all their IP addresses.
All the IP addresses, passwords, etc.
Damn.
It's possible, and I don't know how encrypted the data is. It should be encrypted, in my opinion. When you use one of these remote systems, like they're swiping the card at your table and it goes through a system electronically, I'm hoping that is encrypted from that point on. It probably is because the payment card industry requires that under their rules. Most of the restaurants, if they're swiping cards, they're subject, and retail are subject to the PCI requirements of the payment card industry, and they have very stiff security requirements. And if there's a breach, it is it's going to close the restaurant down or the business down because they normally don't have the $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 to pay to tighten their system back up to become compliant.
Okay.
But I would say most of them are doing a pretty good job. And then I would think if they're using commercial systems, which most restaurants like an Applebee's would be using, that those are as tight as they can be.
Okay. Who do you think has a better cybersecurity, Uber or Lyft?
No idea.
I just imagine Lyft just not doing, or one of the two just doing it better than the other, and the other one just just getting abused by the thefts out there stealing our data.
How about the Waze app?
I picked the wrong one. I'm guessing it's Uber because I have Uber. That's just my theory.
I've used both. I think that their data, again, should be encrypted the way they do their system. One thing when you look at their system, if you look at it, if the IP address, if it's https://,
backslash.
That's an encrypted system. If it doesn't have the S, it's not. But you're going through their app, it should be encrypted.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that. It's good to know.
I haven't heard about anyone breaking into those systems. It's possible someone can. It's possible someone get into anything.
You're right.
But I haven't heard...
As we've learned.
Yeah, I haven't heard of any breaches. I mean, Uber's had a lot of other problems itself. It has had breaches. Actually, Uber has.
I knew it. I picked the wrong one.
I knew it.
Well, I believe this was in the UK that there were several hundred thousand drivers, and then some of their riders had their data breached.
Mm-hmm.
The cyber criminals contacted Uber and offered to sell it back to them. And supposedly Uber paid for it.
What?
But the problem is Uber could not guarantee it ever got all the information. Because who knows what those guys, maybe they kept a copy. Maybe not. Maybe they did.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
And then the problem was Uber didn't tell anybody. It came out months and months later. And the Europeans, especially in the UK, were unhappy about that. And that's another reason why Uber has had some management changes over the past few years.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, Keith, you've taught us a lot through this process, and we've learned a lot. Deck, do you have any other questions? I have a final question.
One final question, yeah, right?
Please jump in.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, man.
Well, you're quite
welcome.
It's
been an absolute journey. Andrew and I, our brains are just a slight tad bigger. We know all. What it comes down to, I think, is just... this is a serious issue, and I think it's good to talk about. It's good to understand as young entrepreneurs to put security on the front of your to-do list, you know, and priorities, I guess, as a business.
I think that the biggest issue, the biggest thing is to be aware that it's a need.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, you can try to do the right things. Try not to... use apps that you don't need to. Get them off your phone.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using your computer in a public place, set up a VPN so you have your own network. Don't use a free off VPN.
Right.
You get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a virtual private network, you're protecting yourself from bad guys sitting over next door, the next table, sifting through all your data as you're sending it through to the Wi-Fi through Caribou or whomever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
As you're setting up a business, it doesn't necessarily cost a lot of money to set up the basic cybersecurity, but you need to talk to people who can either do it the right way or get you the right people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the important thing.
Awesome.
Right on, man. Well, last question. What did you learn today from the time you woke up to the time you're sitting here, 7 o'clock p.m. on a Wednesday night?
Well... I learned that a Canadian law firm, when it says docket 2 mediation report, means continue to work on it. Bet you didn't know that.
No, I had no idea. No idea.
No idea. you're leaving us like,
I'm going to have to Google that one.
And to that I say,
Yeah. But that's a wrap, Keith. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're quite welcome. It's been a great pleasure. And anytime I can help you or anybody else, I'd be glad to do so.
That was Keith Daniels. What a roller coaster that was.
I'm exhausted.
Mentally exhausted. Yeah, my brain is drained.
Oh my gosh. It was just so intense from the start. And when you have someone on who's a lawyer, I totally forgot that he was a lawyer. Like, oh man, just the way they talk, it's just got to be locked into every single word.
They kind of avoid answering everything. They kind of deflect a little bit. I mean, Keith did, he answered a lot of the questions, but you could tell he still had his lawyer roots in him where he was just like, deflect, deflect, deflect.
Well, that's just like how he answers questions. Yeah. I don't think he was like purposely trying to deflect your questions. Maybe he was, maybe there's bad questions, who knows. But nonetheless, dude, thanks for him for coming on, Keith. Like, yeah. That was honestly a blast.
And I think this is a perfect opportunity to bring in Sam Schuneman, marketing intern spotlight number 18. He was able to sit in on that whole conversation, and he's here with us today. Sam, what did you think of the Keith Daniels conversation?
That guy was intense. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting in his spot right now where he was, and I can just feel, you know,
The warmth?
Yeah, well, literally the warmth. But also, I mean, that guy brought a lot to the table. Super knowledgeable. Kind of scares me. I kind of want to delete Facebook now, honestly. That was really, it was really insightful, though. But you can definitely tell he was a lawyer, though. Definitely tell he was a really smart dude. And definitely knows what he's talking about.
Right on, so, man. And just to give our marketing interns a little background, granted, our marketing interns are our listeners.
And our learners.
And our learners. Sam Schuneman is, like Andrew said, it was a marketing intern, but now is a got promoted to a intern. We're going to call him Intern Sam. He's going to be one of our producers when he can be in here, dicing it up with us, checking some content, always on Google, trying to look stuff up for us when we need it. And just kind of being on the marketing front, dude. We're excited to have you.
I'm excited to be on here too. Yeah, you'll be seeing a lot of me, be hearing a lot of me. Hopefully we'll be you know, going on the social media. I'll be posting a lot of live videos and stuff of me, you know, just hanging out.
Your to-do list is endless, man.
Yeah.
Get ready to work.
Yeah, so get locked in, dude. Strap up, zip up your vest, put some stuff in the pockets, and let's go.
I'm ready to work for the boys.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
I'm here for the boys.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the back end. The back end is where our marketing interns are a tier above the rest. They have enjoyed roughly an hour and 3 minutes with the back pocket thus far. So if you have stuck around this this long, I mean, bravo. Kudos to you.
You guys are the best.
We love you guys. Please leave us a comment below if you even like this podcast. And if you did, give us a 5-star review. And if you didn't,
Get out of here.
Yeah, don't even bother. But when we get to the back end, we start off with an average quality. This is something that is a core competency.
Principle.
That's a better word.
Core staple.
It's a staple of the back pocket. Declan Brown, what is our average quality of Season 2, Episode 41?
It is trying hard to not talk about the podcast in corporate setting, in the right angle world. And this is such a big issue because once we tell someone about our podcast, then it consumes that person's life.
The floodgates are open.
The floodgates are open and, you know, people start getting distracted at work. You know, they start working late because they listen to our podcast during their lunch break and it turns that lunch break in from like a 30-minute to an hour because they're just enjoying us so much. It's tough.
They eat it up. And I have a perfect example of how the podcast just absolutely consumed one of my employees at United Healthcare. So I was explaining the podcast and she was all about it. She was like, my boyfriend's going to love this. This is the perfect thing, but I want to listen to one right now. Like what would be a great podcast to listen to? So I'm like, all right, ask her a few questions, get her hobbies and her interests down to figure out which of our 100 episodes to feed her. And I gave her one that was like an hour and a half.
Which one did you give her? Do you remember?
It was Gino. It was a recent one.
Okay.
She was all about marketing, so I was like, all right, Gino's perfect for this. And she listened to the whole thing, and then when she got done, I walked over to her cubicle, and I was like, what'd you think? She goes, the podcast was awesome, but you used 85% of my data for the month.
Yo, chill out, dude. You don't have to listen to it all at once.
Or you could, like, yeah, wait till you get home and download it or something. I was like, but, like, when she said that, it was great. I was like, the joy in, like, just the blood flow went straight to happiness. And then she was like, but it used 85% of my data. And I just, my face went white. And I was like, sorry?
Yeah, don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I guess you got to download it over Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi, man. Shout out to the Wi-Fi. How about this, though?
Whenever you make that noise.
Should I stop doing that?
Yeah. Okay. It picks it up big time.
Yeah, we got to cut. Yeah, Sam, let's cut that out.
That kind of hurt, actually. Yeah,
yeah, let's cut that out, dude.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I got to stop.
Stop.
That's my average quality.
Hey, man. Change. Okay, what else you got for me?
The Lindsay, when she was listening to our podcast to give us some feedback.
Yeah.
And she was at the airport before she was taken off on her flight and just started to listen to our podcast and was so in touch with it. That's just Mr. Flight straight up.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
That's nuts.
So that's like, shout out to us for being engaging. I guess that was my biggest takeaway from right
now. She lost track of time. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Sam, do you ever, is this something that occurs with you? Like when you listen to our podcast, you're like, I can't stop. It's an addiction?
No, I wouldn't say it's an addiction.
Okay.
But definitely get lost in time, though. It's a whole nother world. But, I mean, props to you guys for being able to literally make somebody miss their flight, though.
Thanks.
Delta should hire you guys actually for like a better turnover rate of flights and stuff, or if a flight's too booked.
I think it would help.
They could
put us in there.
Yeah, just somebody that's waiting to get on the flight. You know, if they have to be, you know, it's overbooked. Throw on some headphones on that person, let you listen to the podcast. It's their fault, not Delta's anymore.
I think there should be a separate company that works with, like, you know, Delta has standby flights, basically putting our podcast into the ticket owners, and then we'd be working in part with the standby people that want to get on the flight, so that those people miss their flight and the standby people can get on.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
It's an interesting thought. I don't like it, but it's interesting.
Okay. Well, we'll move on.
Yeah.
It's the gift. It's the season of giving.
Yeah, speaking of flights.
Yeah. Speaking of flights, absolutely.
Everyone's going to be flying everywhere this Wednesday night heading to Thanksgiving to the family. Speaking of that, like, I'm heading to Atlanta for the first time in 4 years because St. Thomas football has grounded me in the land of 10,000 lakes. I finally get to go see my mama's family, which is good news.
Yeah,
see
awesome,
how they're
man.
Doing, see how they've grown. They haven't even seen developed. Andy Podcaster, so I'm going to plug the podcast out the wazoo during Thanksgiving. That's going to be the easiest thing I've ever done.
For sure, dude. So you're excited?
Yes.
Okay, nice. Thanksgiving is just a fun time, man. I think Wednesday before is just like it's like the biggest reunion of all time, whether it's like your high school friends all coming back or if it's your family members. Just a great time to just collaborate, honestly. Well,
there's literally a name for it. It's called Drinksgiving.
Really?
It's literally, yeah, that's like a known drinking holiday now.
Oh,
the Wednesday?
Just the day before Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I think
yeah.
It's the highest rate, like DUI rate in the day. I thought 365. Yeah.
Where'd you
that's
get
really
that?
Interesting, actually.
You just knew that?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Huh. Congrats again.
Congrats to me?
Yeah, that's a
fact?
That's a great, what did you
oh,
mean?
Okay. Yeah. Well, not congrats to the people who got that DUI.
Well, yeah, definitely not congrats to the people who got a DUI, but yeah. Nonetheless.
Those people got it figured out.
Yeah, get it together.
I mean, I know you're joyful with giving thanks,
right.
But like, hold it back a little bit.
What are you thankful
for? Don't get behind
for?
The wheel.
What are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for?
Yeah, this year.
That's a great question, Deck. I'm thankful for Uptown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
That's changed me.
So why is that?
We're sitting here today on November 19th.
Right.
And I was able to figure out a whole new vibe of Minnesota. I thought Minnesota was what St. Thomas had to offer. And it is very much prevalent throughout this state.
Right.
But there's much more here. And it opened up the doors. And I think I'm taking this a little too deep, but I just really do like Uptown, and I like having things near me now versus having to get in like a suburban area, but not very lively suburban area, I guess.
Right. No, it's convenient.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's phenomenal, dude.
That's what I'm thankful for.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
I like that, man.
I thought you were making fun of me at first.
No. I was just like genuinely asking
what are you thankful for, dude?
Dude, thanks for asking. I'm thankful for just opportunities. So that's a little deeper than what you were saying.
Much deeper. Let's see how he spins this one.
Yeah, Decky spin zone, dude. I just love that we've been able to record this for now 41 straight weeks, and it's literally been an opportunity following itself every single week, no matter what. Granted, we'll do like a podcast or a week where we'll have like 4 interviews, which, by the way, we should never do that again. But just simplifying it in terms of just like, every single day is a different opportunity. And I can confidently say the back pocket has taken advantage of every single one of those. Whether it's good or bad, or however what that result was, we at least can say we didn't miss an opportunity.
Well said, man. Love that.
Yeah.
Good. That's a really good thankful. I think that's, you thought that through way better than I did.
Yeah.
So I say kudos way too much now. Have you noticed that?
No, dude. Not at all.
Okay.
So
it's kind of like
good.
How Sam says like.
I haven't said it
at all. At all. Yeah. So I'm thankful for that.
What are you thankful for?
Yeah, what are you
Sam?
Thankful for, Sam?
I can't answer that because. Because
you're not thankful?
Well, I'm not spending this Thanksgiving with my family, actually.
What?
I will be on a flight on Thanksgiving to Nashville.
Oh, why
so,
is that?
So, yeah.
So you can't be thankful for anything? Is that
well,
what you're saying?
I just feel like a really crappy person.
Oh, okay.
Because.
Yeah, let's get into the details.
So instead of staying at home in Minnesota and having Thanksgiving with my family, I am flying to Nashville and then hitching a ride with my buddy down to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and spending the weekend at a frat house.
Auburn, Alabama game?
Auburn, Alabama.
Hell yeah.
Really?
So,
the Iron Bowl.
I'm choosing football and fraternity over family. So,
well, you got to do it at one point.
Yeah.
And I think before, you know, it's like, it gets to the point where it's like, it's late into the season of the family, you know, like, you know, your family's getting old. I think you're doing it at the right time.
There's always Christmas.
You're right.
There's always Christmas. Mm-hmm. I can always hang out with them then. But yeah, so that's my, we have a flight at 10:30 on things on Thursday. So.
And your family was like, yeah, dude, would love for you to leave on the biggest family holiday.
I kind of just threw it on them. I'm like, yeah, like I'm doing this, got a flight. And they just kind of like, they zoned me out or whatever. Okay. And I think now they're like, wait, so you're not going to be here? We should make, I have a family of six, and they're probably like, we should make 3/4 less the amount of, you know, mashed potatoes we should make, because I eat that much mashed potatoes.
Oh, you're eating potatoes.
Yeah, so, yeah. He'll probably hit them on Thursday when I'm like, somebody needs to drive me to the airport because I have a flight, and they're going to be in their, you know, Thanksgiving apparel.
Mm-hmm.
Grandparents will probably be there, you
dressed like pilgrims.
Everybody's going to be ready to eat, you know, little cousins running around. I'm like, my bags are packed, you know.
Yeah.
I got a flight to catch. I got to get down to the South. I've never been to a Southern like fraternity or college though. So
yeah, that's gonna blow you out of the water.
I get to experience Georgia Tech every year.
Ooh,
it's big time.
And this year it'll be at, I don't know where it is hosted this year. If it's at Georgia Tech, we typically go to the game because my grandpa went there and they got good seats. So hopefully it's at Georgia Tech this season.
Right on, dude. Well, trap the puck. What did you learn today, Andy?
Let's go with you. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
what do you got?
I usually ask you how you're doing. So you ask me.
Dak, how are you doing today, man?
Doing well, man. Thanks for asking. But what did I learn today? I learned that memes are hot. They are hot in the streets right now. I've been perusing the streets of Instagram, noticing, you know, Gary V's throwing out memes now. If Gary V's doing something, we're copying them straight up.
We're spin zoning it, I feel like.
Yeah, we're spin zoning it in like our back pocket way. I mean, we're copying the format, but niching down in our fashion, right?
How about utilizing?
Utilizing. There you go. And
I don't like that word, copy.
Yeah, sorry, dude. I mean, we're making the most of our opportunities. But anyways, memes are hot right now. We posted our first meme and it blew up. Had the best conversions we ever had. So that was great. Another thing I learned was sleep is starting to be recognized by major work industries. So I had to give a talk to my company today. I gave a talk at PCL and told them about sleep in construction, and you know, having Matt Berg on the podcast and Dr. Roxanne Pritchard, I felt like I was educated enough to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I found out though through my research that taxi companies, bus driving companies, and truck driving companies are all requiring their employees to track how many hours of sleep they get, and they're required to sleep a certain amount of time each day before they can drive. And if they're pulled over, the cops and people are allowed to check their sleep log. And if they've had less than what it is, then they are like, their contracts get terminated pretty much.
Whoa.
So it's pretty cool. I mean, like, that's a serious step in the right direction. I feel like sleep's important.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was being that severely taken advantage of.
Right. Yeah. That's what I found out.
It needs to be utilized in that way. Yeah.
It was unreal.
Mm.
What'd you learn, man?
I learned, so this is the first winter, we're just getting into the first days of winter, and I learned that the investment I made of the car starter on my keys is fantastic.
The one where you like, you start it before you get into the car?
Yep.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, it's been amazing. So I usually get done making my lunch in the morning, and then I walk to my key and I hit it twice. See the thing light up green, hear the car start, go upstairs, pack everything up, sit down on the couch for like 3 minutes just to like check my email, whatnot.
You just sit on the couch in the morning and just chill for 3 minutes?
I always plan so I'm not rushing it. Hopefully I have that time allotted. If not, I'm running around filling up my water or whatnot.
Forgetting your
lunch. You know the drill.
Yeah.
Forgetting something. And I get to my car and it's already toasty, dude.
That's so awesome. See, I'm just lucky if my car starts in the morning.
Yeah.
I get in my car, put the keys in, and I like turn it a little bit to turn the lights on and everything. And I'm like, all right. And then if it goes on, I'm a happy man. If it doesn't, I'm just like, well, I'm
screwed. To be expected.
To be expected, right? It's a crapshoot every time, man.
Sam, what did you learn?
Yeah, man, what'd you learn?
Kind of piggybacking off of yours, actually. I learned that I really need a car scraper for my windows.
Mm.
This was probably like the fourth, fifth morning I woke up to go to class. Haven't bought a scraper yet, you know, balling on a budget. And
what do you do then? Just drive blind?
Grab a fork?
So No, I actually risk it literally. It's pretty, you know, it's pretty hard to see out when it's like that. Yeah. Our southern listeners won't know, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we understand though.
Many southern listeners.
We understand. You'll have a lot more after my trip to Alabama, let me tell you that much.
Ooh, love that.
Yeah.
We'll give you a bunch of business cards.
Yeah. Good idea.
It'll just have but you have to be me or Andrew so that it plays out, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
You cool with that?
Yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's whatever. So I just throw on the wipers and the heat that goes onto the window.
Yeah. Know,
it's like all the way to the right on most things, I feel like.
Sure.
And I have like a 10 minute drive to class, let the things fly. And it's by the time I get into the St. Thomas parking ramp, it's finally cleared.
Yeah.
But like I've had some really dicey situations going down the road where
you're just like leaning down.
When the sun is coming down, it blinds you. So I'm going home tonight and I'm just gonna take one from one of my parents or my sister's car.
Nice.
If I can't find one, so I'll put them in danger.
Right on.
Savvy, kind of selfish.
Though. Yeah. But savvy. You gotta do what you gotta
do. I need it more than them. Mm-hmm. But I realize I really need one of those. So,
right on, man. Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of funny, Andrew, you're describing how like only one spot of the windshield like actually melts, and that's the part you see out of. So you're just like
you're
looking
crouching.
Through it as like
it's
your
lower part because it's the fan blowing up the heat. So you're like getting to the bottom.
Exactly. Or we make the costly mistake of hitting like the antifreeze or whatever that comes up, or the wipers makes
think
it
it's gonna
1,000
work.
Times worse. Like I literally like your head's out the window at that point. I can't see anything. Face is freezing. Yeah, that's what we live for, right?
There's always that moment you're like, oh, the antifreeze will work now, and you blast. It has to work, right? And you blast it, and it just makes everything worse. Oh,
I only have one side of my antifreeze that works. It is the side that's in the passenger. So when I blast it, I have to blast it like 4 times for it to like finally get into my vision so I can see.
Bro,
it's that barely works. So the antifreeze is half working. The windows don't roll down. So I'm like so concerned about when cops pull me over. What's that going to look like?
So open the door, man.
I'm going to open the door and they're going to beat me, dude, because they're going to be like, this guy's trying to run.
Whoa, dude, easy.
Dude, that
not on this podcast.
That's why I feel like it's going to happen, because I can't roll down the window. They're going to be like, whoa, this guy's getting out of the car, a little tough guy. You know, I don't know, dude. If I got out to it, my hands up and I got my registration insurance, you know, in my
license. I did that once in high school.
Yeah.
I got pulled over for rolling a stop sign and I couldn't find my wallet. I was like, I think I left my wallet at home, and all I had was like registration. He's like, all right. So he goes to his car and like start like looks me up in the system, and I found it like underneath my something in my backpack.
Right.
And I get out of the car. I'm like 17, like just got my license. I get out of the car. I'm like, I got my license. And he goes, get back in the car.
Get in there.
I was like, oh, sorry. And I was like, yeah, I thought I was like.
But you see what I'm saying, though? Yeah. Like, if you go against the protocol, the cops are going to immediately think, like, this guy's a psycho, right?
Yeah.
And driving the white Stratus, you never know.
Yeah, your car's about to be done. But keep fighting.
Keep fighting.
The mustache probably raises some questions to begin with. You're already, like, a red flag when he pulls you over.
Yeah. Well, he's first going to say, wow, this is the best looking guy I've ever pulled
That's
over.
That's not what I meant, you know?
All right, let's trap the puck.
All right, aside from that, feel good story. Let's get our marketing interns feeling good. So this has been kind of a last-ditch effort that we've always had. The feel good story is like the last thing. We're like, all right, what makes us feel good? We write something down and we go for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to start capitalizing more on making it known to people that are having a significant impact in our lives, and we want to tell other people about that, thus making them feel good.
Okay.
Yesterday we interviewed, or actually this week's marketing intern spotlights, Gabe Malinsky. And I just want to give him a shout out and just how he made us feel when he says, you know, you are who you spend the most time with week to week. You know, the 5 closest people are the ones that you most emulate.
Yeah, and you're the average of those 5 people.
Exactly. And he's like, dude, I hang out with you guys 3 times a week for at least a couple hours. Just saying that he listens to our stuff and like totally loves what we do. And it's just always good to hear that recognition, man.
That was so cool.
Right? Wasn't that the coolest thing ever?
That was the best feel-good story that he could have brought up.
Right.
And reiterating that fact is perfect.
Right. And then just understanding like the value that he's bringing now and like how he's applying what we're kind of preaching into his own thing with Never Stop or Never Peak and his clothing company and everything. So just shout out Gabe, man. What a great dude. I hope other marketing interns and other people like that utilize us in the same way.
So, tremendous, man.
Yeah, simple as that.
I hope you guys feel better. Let's hype up next week. Next week we have Mark Mitri.
I don't know, dude. Mark Mitri is the guy. Just so famous on LinkedIn, and
he's a big LinkedIn guy.
It's so funny,
Sam. You're looking surprised over here with that comment, but he knows the optimization the best. Like, we talk to him on the regular just to figure out how to make sure our stuff is on the top of people's feeds.
Yeah,
and it's commenting on other people. So like, posts is one of the cool, like the biggest. We'll talk about it next week.
But anyways, yeah. He has just been such a big culprit on the back end of our whole podcast. Showed us like Google Hangouts, showed us Zencastr, showed us Headliner, the app that we make social media posts on. He is, I think he's like 21 or 22. He owns a, he obviously runs the Humans 2.0 podcast, which is a top 100 podcast. And he's just been doing the same things that we've been doing, you know, preaching the growth and development, but also preaching and getting on these just awesome dudes like Neil Patel and Ed Milet and just all these like really big names in podcasting. So we're going to get his story and figure out how he's done it and just really collaborate, man, and tell some more stories. So I'm excited for it. Next week, what is that? November 26th at 5 a.m., dude. We will see you all there. Mark Mitri. Take care, guys. Love you.
Take care. I live.